that government. What's interesting is they have not even made the claim that there was an immediate threat to the United States or to American citizens. That could be used to justify an immediate presidential order. They have not tried to say, because certainly that isn't the case, there is no threat to the United States coming out of the chaos in Libya.
Phyllis, very quickly, in October of 2011, then-Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was between interviews when she was told that Muammar Gaddafi had been killed. This was her response.
Yes, we came, we saw, he died.
Did it have anything to do with your visit?
No, I'm sure it did.
That was Hillary Clinton in 2011. Your final response,
whatever else, this was not a joke. It was not a joke for the thousands of people who have died in Libya. It was not a joke for anyone. The situation in Libya is far worse now than it was. Hillary Clinton, of course, as Secretary of State then, was the leading voice urging President Obama to participate. And this kind of escalation is only going to make the situation worse. There is no military response to terrorism. President Obama says that over and over again. It's time we held him accountable to his own words, to say there is no military response. Therefore, we shouldn't use military methods against terrorism. It doesn't work.
Phyllis Bennis, thanks so much for being with us, fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies. That does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Sam Malkoff, Laura Gottesdiener, Carla Wills, Noreen Sheikh. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with our hosts Abe Proctor and Joe Uris. Today's topic will be what a Donald Trump presidency might bring to these here United States and the world. Your investment in community radio can go on with a planned gift to KBOO. Consider adding KBOO to your will or add KBOO as a beneficiary to your insurance and bank accounts. You can change your mind anytime if your circumstances change, but recognizing KBOO along with your family and friends in your legacy giving is a powerful commitment to media justice. Let us know if you add KBOO to your plans. We'd like to thank you for your considerate future gift. Contact Becky Myers at 503-231-8032 or email development at kboo.org to notify us of your plans. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Nappy Farms, specializing in sustainable U-Pick blueberry practices. Nappy Farms U-Pick Blueberries is located at 10280 Southeast Orient Drive in Boring, Oregon. For more information, the number is 503-663-0885 or online at nappyfarms.com.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Oregon Cannabis Growers Fair starting Saturday, August 13th at 10 a.m. and ending Sunday, August 14th, 2016 at 4 p.m. at the Oregon State Fairgrounds in Salem. For the first time ever, Oregon's producers will be able to display live plants at the Cannabis Fair. Over 60 grows will be showcased this year, and there will be awards for the winning plants in several categories. Again, that's the Oregon Cannabis Growers Fair starting Saturday, August 13th at 10 a.m. and ending Sunday, August 14th at 4 p.m. at the Oregon State Fairgrounds, 2330 17th Street, Northeast in Salem. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Abrupt Climate Change. A talk with Dr. Guy McPherson, Monday, August 8th at 6:30 p.m. at the Waypost in Portland. Dr. Guy McPherson is a professor of conservation biology and an author. He'll present his synthesis of the current peer-reviewed research on Earth's recent phase of rapid warming. Again, that's Abrupt Climate Change, a talk with Dr. Guy McPherson, Monday, August 8th at 6:30 p.m. at the Waypost, 3120 North Williams Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Yes, it's the most amazing show on earth. It's the silliest presidential race ever, the most frightening, the most scary, the most bizarre, and the least progressive in the history of, well, yeah, can't say that. The fact of the matter is, you have so little choice. We'll talk about why, and we'll talk about what's happening, and we'll talk about the Donald. You won't believe your ears. Stay tuned to KBOO. Stay tuned to the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. We'll knock your socks off. 231-8187. Well,
yeah,
yeah.
Here we are. We're back.
Yeah, we're back. It's circus time, and boy, what a bizarre situation. We're going to talk about the Trump, aren't we?
Yeah, we are.
We can't help it. I mean, you know, Hillary's interesting, and you know, but Trump.
He's not a normal candidate.
He's not a normal human being.
This is not a normal election.
He had bone spurs.
Yeah, he did.
He had disappearing bone spurs. He was an athlete, and suddenly he had bone spurs. He didn't serve. You know, it's okay though. I didn't serve. I don't want to claim that he's unique.
I wasn't born.
Yeah, no, you're such a young person.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, this is Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. That's Abe Proctor. I'm Joe Uris. The number to call is 231-8187. We're gonna talk about the Donald a little bit, and then we're gonna open it up for all of you. But it's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing, and it's pretty scary. And I'm beginning to think that no matter what, Donald will not get to be president of the United States. Even though Michael Moore and others have argued that this could easily happen because of angry white men, basically.
Yeah.
I don't think people are that stupid. I don't.
God, I hope you're right.
Well, come on. The guy is ill-equipped in any, never mind left and right, never mind conservative and liberal and all that stuff, in any measure of anything to measure who should be with their hand on the nuclear boom box, it just doesn't compute. It doesn't make sense.
No, it really doesn't. It really doesn't at all.
The guy has had no experience in government. No experience in doing anything except making money at the expense of others, which, while traditional, is certainly not a good recommendation for president of the United States.
No, it really isn't. And I want to dig into that question a little more in depth today.
Okay.
I suspect today that we're going to get our typical quadrennial barrage of phone calls suggesting that this would all be made better if we would all somehow decide to vote for a third-party candidate. And I submit to you, gentle listeners, that is the wrong answer to this particular problem, that a third-party candidate, either the Green Party's Jill Stein or the Libertarian Party's Gary Johnson, has zero chance of winning this election. And that if you decide that that's the alternative to two odious candidates, is picking a third-party candidate, that is your right. By all means, go ahead and do it. But don't be surprised if a man completely unfit for higher office ends up holding the presidency of the United States. If a third party is to be a viable alternative to the corrupt, corporate-friendly oligarchy that we have now, the answer is not to throw up a presidential candidate every 4 years and tell everybody they ought to vote. The way to power for a third party is from the bottom up. If you're a Green and you want Greens to rise to national prominence, well, start working to elect Greens at the local level. Run for office yourself at the local level. First, it starts at the city level, then the county level. Then you start having Greens in the state legislature. Then you start having Greens appointed to judgeships. Then you start having Greens in Congress and in the Senate. That's how it happens. But to say right now that the answer is a third-party candidate, that's not going to happen.
Well, I know that in 2000, it was the ironic situation of Nader that made possible the stealing of the election in Florida that gave us the second Bush, Bush the Lesser, who then brought us into endless war.
I don't think that's an adequate explanation for the 2000 election. I don't think Nader cost Gore that
well,
election.
See, I don't know. I mean, the votes, the number of votes in Florida was significant. Allowed the manipulators to give Bush the contest. So I don't know. I don't know. I think it's not an answer to that. It doesn't mean, and I agree with you about how it's possible to build a third party or at least a party that represents the interests of working people, but. I just find that it's extremely the system is so rigged in favor of establishment and intentionally so from the very beginning that it's really really difficult to develop a new party. The last successful new party, ironically, was the Republicans in at the time prior to the Civil War.
What seems to be the pattern in American history is that when a third party gains a critical mass of followers, such that they become a viable player, usually their policy positions are co-opted by one of the two existing parties. That's how it has tended to happen.
Well, and prior to that, prior to the time of the Republican Party, we had the rise of the Whigs, and the Whigs was a combination of various interests, including Southern slave interests, but was, by its day and by its standard, a revitalization of American democracy. And that's a weird thing to say, given that the Whigs were this combination of all sorts of political tendencies. So, you know, historically, the whole situation really is a political system that is at the tail end of an economic system that moves from agricultural power to and slavery to industrial power, and from industrial power to imperialism, and to what I call, and I think rightly, late-stage capitalism, which is very similar to fascism. Now we actually have a fascist manifestation running as the Republican candidate. Very weird. Very weird.
Very weird. I suppose we should announce that this is the Abe and Joe Talk.
Yeah, we did.
Program.
I did that, but did it's you? Good to do it.
Yeah,
more
it's good
than
to
once.
Do it more than once.
Yeah.
This is KBOO 90.7 FM. If you're listening on the internet tubes, you are already tuned in to KBOO.FM. If you want to talk to us this morning, you can do so over the phone at 503-231-8187, or you can leave a comment in writing at the Facebook page. That's facebook.com/Abe and Joe, or on the Twitter machine. At HonestAbe72.
You know, I know you want to say a few things before we open it up to everybody.
No, I think,
are we cool?
Think we should open
you
it
wanna,
up.
You want to open it
I
up?
I think
there
will be
callers?
Plenty of opportunity to say what I want to say.
Okay. So who?
Jim, good morning.
Yes, good morning. You can hear me okay?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Last week on KBOO, the debate between Chris Hedges and Robert Reich, conducted by Amy Goodman.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, I want to ask you one question about your opinion about this, not that you agree or disagree, but just try to define what was meant here. And here I'll quote. Chris Hedges said that the neo-progressive influence in America was leading to proto-fascism. Could you explain maybe what he thought he was saying there?
Well, first of all, I missed it.
I did not hear it either.
So neither of us can accurately do that. I'm sorry. We just can't.
Let me just state again what he said. He said, this is Chris Hedges, not Robert Reich. I think Robert Reich disagreed with him. But Chris Hedges said that, and he wants a third party. He said that neo-progressives' influence in America was leading them to proto-fascism.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
How would you explain that or interpret that?
Well, I would interpret that as a general description of the tendency of accumulated and concentrated wealth, its tendency to have a corrosive effect on the institutions and the mechanisms of representative government. If you have a small number of people with an awful lot of money, they wield an incredibly disproportionate influence on the electoral process, and their prerogatives are what end up being represented when legislation is passed. Okay.
Now, my impression is that neo-progressives, as very progressives, would be against big money.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So how would he say? Because he's, you know, Chris Hedges is very definitely a progressive.
Yes.
How could he say that the neo-progressives influencing America would lead America into proto-fascism?
I think I didn't hear him, so I have to be very clear and careful here. But I think, knowing his writings and so on, that what he perceives is a split between the what do you want to call them? The Hillary Clinton sort of liberalism, proto-liberalism, which is really, again, late-stage capitalist support for particularly in the case of military things, imperialism. He thinks that any effort to build a progressive movement that splits off voters from that thing ignores the clear and present danger of the real fascism that is now revealed, not even within the Republican Party per se, but within the odd group that has gained control of the presidential race for the Republicans, which is Donald Trump and other weirdness.
Mm-hmm. He seemed to have been talking about the Democratic people, though, or Hillary. Anyway, that's good enough. I just want to make one mention about Trump.
Yeah.
I personally believe that Trump is so smart that he's not making a mistake in anything. I believe that Trump entered the race for the one purpose, and that is to destroy the Republican Party. That's my comment.
You know, I've heard that from other sources, too. I don't think that's what he's about. I think he's far too egotistical and far too opportunistic to have a back plan. I think he's just running because he wants to be the president.
Yeah. Well, I hope that's better, but I do believe
I don't think it's better. I think it's
Republican
different.
Okay, either listen. Way, he won't make it.
Well, I don't know. I think the question of whether or not he makes it or not depends upon whether or not people like yourself and like us are so angry and so disappointed with the failure of the progressive effort of Bernie Sanders that we walk away from the process. And I think that's possibly what he's referring to. It's a very dangerous situation for people who actually have high hopes for American democracy. And I think that people need to really think about the implications of unknowledgeable, kind of crazy, Mussolini-loving kind of guy being president of the United States.
Well, thank you for
the
call, sir.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
And the way you just described Trump, I think, was pretty accurate. But one might say, wasn't W. Bush, wasn't he largely cut from the same cloth? Was he fairly ignorant of the way government actually worked? Was he fairly ignorant of geopolitics and of history? I think the answer is yes, but he had the benefit, and I've used that in its most relative term, the benefit of being at least grounded in establishment GOP politics, which, however distasteful many of us might find them, look like the model of rationality compared to what's coming out of the Trump campaign right
now. Well, I agree and disagree. I mean, I think that the Cheney Republican Party, which is what brought us the tragedy and the horror of this unending war in the Middle East, and that's really, we need to locate it in a plan which had more to do with oil than anything else, I think, that really is a disaster which we may have to carry forward for years. I don't see that the neoliberals and neocons and so on can back away from that. And so we are stuck fighting pointlessly and senselessly against a fervent religious revivalist movement within a small element of Islam, but big enough to make real problems.
Yeah.
So I just really think that it is we must acknowledge the role of the Cheney Republicans and the fact that they too had an imperialist and I guess fascist view of how things ought to go, and the adventurism that they engaged in has led us into a situation where so-called liberals, people like Obama, are stuck. They're actually stuck. You can't walk away from their perspective. You can't walk away, and the radical craziness people won't let you walk away, walk back what we've done in the Middle East. And of course, if you really look at that historically, it really goes back to the struggle of American and European imperialists going way back to, in the American case, to the 1890s, but in the European case, even before that, and eventually to World War I, with a terribly unjust solution to what was going on in the Middle East, where basically France and England divided up the Middle East arbitrarily and created a system which would eventually lead us to where we're at now. That's what I think.
Yeah, all that is true, but I still think the Bush-Cheney administration will look sane in comparison to the Trump administration.
Well, only because it has some more knowledgeable people in it. Trump is crazy, and his craziness appeals to a lot of people who are desperately angry. There is a change that has happened in modern industrial societies where all the work has been transferred to cheaper labor, and we are left with essentially an investment-based economic system. And that means that a lot of people, particularly a lot of white men, are finding themselves either underemployed or underpaid and out of work. And that's very annoying. It's very aggravating. It's very emasculating. And it leads people into an angry rage, searching for a cause that is simple to understand, and that is really the structural setup for fascism.
Let's go back to the phones. Brian, good morning.
Good morning, guys. So, I couldn't have said it any better myself. Everything you just said was right on.
So it's like what I said?
the last comment you made was just great. You know, I think we're perfectly set up for fascism right now. And you know, the thing is I'm 57, so I remember Reagan, and I didn't really have opinions formulated at that point politically. But, you know, the thing is Reagan was, I knew enough back then to where I heard Reagan speak, and I thought he was crazy. And everybody I knew thought he was crazy. There was no way he was going to win, and he won twice. So did Bush, the second. He won twice. There was no way you could listen to a speech from Bush, even in the first election, and not know that the guy had a problem. You know, and by the time the second Bush came around, I was older, a little more well-seasoned, and, you know, it wasn't what he was talking about, is the way he said it. And the comments he made, you know, in between what he said, it wasn't just an opinion. He was nuts, and he proved that. You know, him and Dick Cheney both proved that. But you know, the point is, and what I'm making is, Donald Trump is crazy. He's crazier than Reagan, and he's crazier than the second Bush. But he's just an evolution of crazy. And I think that I really honestly think that he will win. And for us thinking people, us people who know, Hillary Clinton having Warren Buffett endorse her, well, hey, Warren Buffett, look at the train accident a few weeks ago here in the Portland area.
Well, the Gorge, yeah.
Yes. Whose trains are those? Those are Warren Buffett's trains. You know, I mean, come on. You know, this guy's not real. He's not on our side. You know, he's transporting dangerous fuel through our beautiful countryside, and he's destroying things around him. So and I'm sure he's blocking the safety factors that are going to have to be put into those trains that the legal system is trying to pass. So what do we have? I mean, we have Hillary on one side, who you know, has people like Warren Buffett on her side and is glorying in the killing of Gaddafi. You know, Amy Goodman just put that on. Or you have Trump, who's just outwardly and overtly crazy. So, I mean, what do we have here? And I can see Trump winning because Trump has he's a white male, and that seems to get the vote in this country at this
point. Okay. Well, thanks for your comments.
Have a good one.
Yeah, I don't have quite as dark a view.
No.
I do want to point out one thing that was brought up here on the trains, just so we're clear about it. At this point, the track systems and the braking systems on the trains that are delivering the highly explosive oil from the Bakken oil fields and so on are not modern. They're not up to date. In fact, the whole American rail system compared to European rail systems and many Asian rail systems are antiquated and dangerous. One of the things that historically people should understand is that Westinghouse, there really was a guy named Westinghouse, invented an air brake that made it much safer to operate trains. And it was not adopted by the railroads. They resisted it for years because it would cost them money to do that. They preferred to have people lose their arms or lose their lives shifting trains around than to make it safer. I mean, and that's just an example of the horrors that capitalism produced in the old days and apparently still is producing. Because it is an issue, not that the trains could ever be really safe, but it is still a clear issue with the trains going through the gorge. I just wanted to throw that out. That's not a topic.
Okay,
for
yeah,
me.
I don't want to spend this.
No, let's not
show
talk about trains.
Okay, so objections to his policy positions aside, it's my opinion, and I'm sure I'm not alone in this, that Donald Trump is a man fundamentally unfit for the presidency in terms of temperament. And in terms of character, he is a megalomaniac. He is a narcissist. He is thin-skinned in the extreme. And this is a guy who, at the slightest sound or sign of criticism, will fire back tweets. You know, in the moment, he was tweeting about what some of the speakers at the Democratic convention were saying as they were saying it. And this goes, of course, up to and including criticism of a family. A Gold Star family, a Muslim family, whose son lost his life in the war in Iraq. This guy is fundamentally incapable of handling criticism of any kind. He is the very definition of a thin-skinned reactionary, not the kind of person, I submit, that should have a nuclear arsenal at his disposal.
What?
Now, couple this with a few other recent comments he's made. Including a not-so-recent comment about his desire to exclude members of a major world faith from entry into the United States. Okay, right now, the West, broadly speaking, is being engaged. I say they are not. The West is not itself engaging necessarily, but being engaged in a campaign of asymmetrical terrorist warfare by highly motivated religious crazy people, primarily Islamic religious crazy people. Now, there's been a big to-do on the right about how President Obama has not used the phrase radical Islamic terrorism when describing the violence in which the United States and other Western powers are engaged. There's a number of reasons for this, not the least of which is that the very people who are waging terrorist attacks against the Western powers are doing so in the context and the framework of a major clash of world faiths, right? A religious war. And so for an American president to come out and frame the issue in those terms is to give these people exactly what they want. They want this struggle to be perceived as a clash between major world religious faiths. So you have a person running for president who not only is ready and willing and continually frames the struggle in terms of a religious war, but also wants to exclude members of one of those major world faiths from entry into the United States. So no matter what your position politically, it doesn't take very much thought to determine that that course of action is ruinous and potentially could lead to a large-scale engagement of the United States military and the militaries of the other Western powers in an ultimately unwinnable war.
Yeah, I agree. Actually.
This is not child's play. This is not something to be dismissed. This is a guy who shouldn't have this job. Say what you will about his opponent. There is no equivalence here. And every 4 years, I hear a lot of people call up this program and say that there's no difference between the two major parties. There is absolutely no difference between the two major parties' nominees. And I say to you today that if you're holding that position right now, you are deluding yourself.
So you're really saying that that this is outside of the normal discourse of the disappointing Liberal Party of the Democrats,
yes,
and the horrifying, yes, unliberal Conservative Party of the Republicans.
Yes, and let me give you a little more background to underscore my point. We've described the politics of Donald Trump on this program before as the politics of dominance. What did he do when he was on the stage with all those other Republican candidates in the early debates? He called them names. He slapped them around. He attacked them personally to see if they would fight back. It was a display of guerrilla dominance on stage. And every time he did those things, every time he said, "Oh, little Marco," or every time he pointed at Jeb Bush and said, "You have no energy," his poll numbers increased. There is a segment of the electorate, and you described them very accurately, I think, a few minutes ago, that responds to this sort of strongman politics. If you listen closely to what Mr. Trump is saying, and you really don't have to listen all that closely, he's not saying much of anything. He offers virtually no policy specifics of any kind. He offers broadsides like, "We're going to make America great again. We're going to build a wall. We're going to keep all the Muslims out." And then he says things like he invites belligerent powers, Russia in this case, to go ahead and have at it. Go ahead and hack the Democrats' emails, he said.
That is a very strange thing.
It's a very strange thing to say. And all of these things point to the fact that he, A, is temperamentally unfit for the job, and secondly, represents a kind of candidacy and a kind of politics that fall outside the range of all accepted political norms that we've experienced in this country to date. Now, you can make a very good argument that, yes, it's about time for a politics that falls outside of accepted norms, but I don't think that this is the kind of politics that you're looking for. Now, consider a couple more things that Trump has said recently. First of all, he's come forward now and said that the debate schedule is being rigged. The debates, forthcoming debates between himself and Secretary Clinton are being rigged, that they are being aired at the same time as a couple of prominent NFL games. And this is a deliberate trick to steer eyeballs away from the debates. And he likened it to the scheduling fracas that developed during the Democratic primary with Senator Sanders. So there's that. He's called into question the legitimacy of the debate schedule.
Well, because he could never debate with Hillary Clinton.
Precisely.
And come out ahead.
But there's another side to this coin. He has also, within the last 48 hours or so, himself and his campaign surrogates suggested that the electoral process itself is rigged. So I think he's laying the groundwork, first, to not participate in any debates, and secondly, to contest or even reject the outcome of the election in November. So what do you get when you get a strongman candidate whose operative politics is built around dominance, who is already suggesting that the electoral process is illegitimate, and his followers are very angry and very well-armed?
Whoa, what are you saying?
I'm suggesting that Donald Trump, after he loses in November, and I'm going to come out right now and say I think he's going to lose, will contest the results of the election, not concede, and possibly even stir up violence as a result.
I don't know. I mean, I simply don't know.
I don't know either.
I'm not in any position to make an evaluation of that kind. I don't know how angry, how revolutionary, as it were, that right-wing, what we assume to be white male community is, if they really believe that they need to take arms against the government of the United States. I don't know if I buy any of that.
There were repeated incidents of violence at Trump rallies during the primary.
That's true.
Encouraged by the man himself.
That's
from
true.
The podium.
That's true.
What I'm saying is there's enough that's up in the air here. There is enough that has departed from the norms of political discourse as we understand them, that it's very hard to predict what might actually become of all this. And if the signals he's giving out now about the debates and about the legitimacy of the election itself are any indication, who knows what might happen.
Well, part of what I think is a little more mundane. I think he's terrified of actually having a debate with someone who knows facts.
Right, particularly a woman.
Yeah,
who knows
and
facts.
A woman to boot, as it were.
Yeah.
And I think that he's trying to find a way of getting out of that without looking like he's getting out of that.
Right. Well, let's take care of a little biz and we'll go back to the phone.
Okay.
All right. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Alternative Radio, writer Thomas Frank talks about what's wrong with the Democratic Party. At 10, Air Cascadia is off. We'll hear Flashpoints, which features reporter Arun Gupta talking about his investigation of the company Numi Financial and the industry built around exploiting the banking needs of prison inmates. In addition, Flashpoints presents a reading by Howard Zinn of his classic work, A People's History of the United States. At 11 on Stage and Studio, we hear Scene on Radio, a documentary about radio storytellers. At 11:30 on Art Focus, host Joseph Gallivan speaks with Sarah Krajewski, curator of modern and contemporary art at the Portland Art Museum. All this and more coming up today on KBOO.
Yeah, good stuff, all of it.
Yep.
You know, I find myself really watching Donald Trump, and he makes gestures that if I Google Mussolini, are exactly the same gestures. The same movement of the body, the same thrust of the chest, the same tucking in of the chin, the same kind of arrogant presentation of self. And I really wonder, is he studying fascists to imitate them? Or is it just that fascists are like that? Now, it's not like Hitler. Hitler's very different, was very different. This is really much more Mussolini-like. And I really have to say that because it's too familiar, too clear in the physical sense.
I can't argue with you. All right, this is KBOO 90.7 FM. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program. I'm Abe. That guy over there is Joe. We're taking your phone calls, 503-231-8187. We're also taking your comments on Facebook, facebook.com/Abe and Joe, and on the Twitter machine at HonestAbe72. Mark writes into the Facebook page to say, yesterday, Trump described Hillary as, quote, the devil, unquote.
The devil.
And said Bernie, quote, made a pact with the devil, unquote. What incompetence, Mark offers. Narcissus fell in love with himself and drowned in gazing at his reflection in the pond. This is the fate of empires. Trump slanders everyone as haters and has no interest in the issues and suffering of the 99%.
Well, I would agree with that analysis. But I think that the... You know, here's the thing. This is outside, so far outside the norms that you can either see it as the last, the last elections in America, or at least the threat of that, or you can perceive it as politics as normal, and I and others are just in denial because this is so naked. Either way, this is way beyond even the stolen election of 2000, way beyond the discourse that led us into the disasters in the Middle East. It's really weird. The fact that Trump likes people like Putin, even Saddam Hussein of all people, and that he praises strong men and dictators, I imagine if he were given free rein, he would praise, I don't know, that he would like Hitler, he would like Mussolini, he would like Stalin. He is not, in any sense, a thoughtful man. And this is really a very serious situation. It's serious only because he has to be taken seriously. So it's no longer, you know, it's no longer a situation where, well, we need to build a good... Social Democratic Party to counter all the nonsense of the Democrats, or we need to really make sure that a Democrat or a Republican is elected. Trump is no Republican by any traditional means, except in the most extreme sense. Hillary is disappointing in many of these ways, though I think most of her pronouncements, most of her suggestions, seem to me to be in line with the traditional Democratic politics, unlike Trump, who is not in line with anything politically except Trump. So it's very weird, and it's very outside the norm. And it leaves people in the situation where they have to recognize the super weirdness of the situation. That's all I think.
Should we go back to the phones?
I think so.
All right. Frank, good morning.
Good morning. Hey, you open your program encouraging people to vote, you know, for third parties. We've run through this in every election. I mean, you go back to Gore Bush and people blame Nader for the fact that we ended up with Bush, and that could be up for debate. I think it is very important that people do vote Green Party, not from the sense that Jill Stein has any chance of winning a presidential election, but based on the rules of the Federal Election Commission, the third parties are out of the loop until they accumulate a certain percentage of the vote of the population. Then they become eligible for federal funds, become eligible to have to be present at the various debates and the various venues with the election.
15%. They base it on a few polls that are out there, and if you can average 15%, then yes, you can participate in the debates.
Exactly. Now, our two-party system realistically is a one-party system if you're looking at it from the standpoint of the military-industrial corporate complex. No matter who wins this election, these people will have their man or their woman in office. There are some very narrow distinctions between Clinton and Donald Trump. And so the object is that we're going to become a more democratic society, and we're going to open, you know, the opportunities for people to be able to vote and have representation. Then it becomes imperative that we encourage and support, strongly support, third parties, and to get them so they do get the recognition through the FEC.
Okay.
Then they're off and running.
I think that's an interesting point. I think the danger of Trumpism is so great that I don't agree with that necessarily, but it's a valid point. There has to be, one thinks, a time when we can develop new political parties, and you're saying it. This is that time, and I appreciate that.
I
know you disagree.
I don't entirely disagree. The time to have built up the Green Party, for example, into a national contender was 20 years ago. I mean, there needs to be a whole lot more in place now. To reach that 15% threshold, much more groundwork needed to have been laid before now.
Well, local politics is the key, and it's tedious.
It's not enough every 4 years to say vote for a third-party candidate. It's not enough.
I want to actually interrupt the stream of this to announce something that I just got a call about, and I think it's important. The Portland Elder Caucus that came out of the struggle that was cut short just a couple of years ago, essentially is holding an event at the House of the American Friends Service Committee tonight at the Friends Meeting House, 4312 on Stark, and it's actually a movie about a very interesting movie about Brian Wilson, and I would suggest people want to go to that. I just wanted to throw that out there to give us a pause in this really creepy, I have to say it, really creepy electoral process. Yeah.
Brian Wilson was a genius.
Is what?
Genius.
Yeah, Brian Wilson is a genius. He also is some weird association with a serial killer, but never mind.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. John, good morning.
Hello. You know, a couple weeks ago during the Republican convention, people were accusing, the speechwriter for Melania, is that her name? Trump's
Melania. Wife,
Melania. Yeah. Well, about, you know, plagiarizing Michelle Obama.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I heard a little bit of Donnie's speech for his acceptance for being the presidential candidate, I said, wait a minute. I've heard this before. So I Googled Adolf's speeches.
Adolf Hitler?
Yeah. And this one was 1933. And if you take out a couple of, you know, things of it, it was like his speechwriters plagiarized Adolf's. It was, if you Google, like, a 1933, I think, acceptance speech for for Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote it down, but I know the policy is not to read things, whatever. But it's a short and sweet, Hallmark, kind of thing. But the last part of it is says, "Elect us, and we shall restore law and order." Everything was about law and order.
Yeah, no, I see the similarity myself, and I because I don't think Trump. This is really an important thing. I don't think Trump's literate. And because he's not literate, I doubt that he knows that he is copying the traditional fascists of the right of the 1920s and 30s.
Yeah.
So I just sort of think it's his instinct, it's his nature that he believes in a fascist solution.
Yeah. Well, there was this, you used to teach history, so anytime there's an economic downturn, a little bit of rats come in, and take advantage of the whole situation.
Well, and remember that it's really important, not acknowledged by either party. The fact of the matter is that we had a major economic depression in 08. 07-08, and that the recovery from that has been slow and is continuing. And it is one of the things it has done is it has reshaped the American industrial base totally. It was happening before that, but it became accelerated under that. And essentially, a large swath of people whose jobs were decent jobs with decent pay are now unemployed or unemployable, or redundant, as they say in England. And that is a real tragedy, and those people look around for an explanation. And since we as a society don't have any kind of an interpretation like Marxism or other critical theories, the only explanation ends up being a conspiracy of the sort that Trump can push. And the anger around issues of race and class and sex becomes center stage in a way that is non-analytical and non-rational, and that leads up to really within that anger context a turning toward a magical, and I think that's the really key term, a magical solution to the current series of crises, particularly for those who are losers in the in the great struggle.
Well, anyway, just Google the 1933 speech, and you'll get a little bit of it.
Thanks for the call.
Hey, thanks very much for the call. Corey writes into the Facebook page, that's facebook.com/Abe and Joe, to say, "Joe McCarthy was brought down by attacks on his decency. Drumpf will lose the same way. As for the caller talking about the white male vote, Hillary Clinton has a 66% electoral chance. Donald Trump has 34%. And I think he's getting those from 538.com's analyses. I'm not sure. That's all that matters. Hillary Clinton doesn't need angry white men to win because she'll get the demographic of everyone else. And yes, I'm also getting sick of the false equivalency of Clinton and Trump being one and the same from all these pseudo-intellectuals. This is not a hard choice, in my opinion."
Who's that?
Corey. Susan also writes in to say, "In my view, we must be careful about the way the word crazy is used in connection with past presidents and Donald Trump in particular. As a former mental health nurse, we may not agree with the positions of Ronald Reagan and George Bush. However, they were not and are not crazy in the true sense. However, in the case of Donald Trump, mental health professionals have noted that he exhibits many symptoms listed in the latest edition of the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychiatric Association, for narcissistic personality disorder. Among those, loosely stated, are characteristics such as an inability to take criticism, an aggrandizement of self, the need to be the center of attention, an exaggerated sense of one's own importance, a tendency to minimize others' contributions, an inability to consider another's feelings, etc. And it's my opinion that the man is legitimately mentally ill."
So she's saying these other people had bad political views, but they weren't crazy.
They were fundamentally rational beings. But she's saying that Trump is not.
Okay.
Yeah.
All I can say about that is okay. We just got handed a note from our soon-to-disappear, sadly, board operator. Trump is literate. His first wife claims now she was paid off, so she's not supposed to talk. He keeps a book of Hitler's speeches on his nightstand. We don't know if that's true or not. She said it. They had a bad relationship, so he plays dumb to pander to his constituency. Uneducated, white, angry racist. He's actually said as much. That's what Steve says. I don't know.
There was a piece recently in the Washington Post, I want to say. I could be wrong about that. Interviewing a man who was the ghostwriter for Trump's autobiography, The Art of the Deal.
Oh, yeah. I've seen 80s. Several interviews yes. of him.
And this guy thinks Trump is unfit for the presidency and doesn't believe that Trump has actually read an entire book in his adult life. Said the man was incapable of focusing his attention for any extended period of time. He said it made it virtually impossible to interview him for the book because Trump couldn't sit still long enough, for example, to relate episodes from his childhood.
Maybe he has scabies or something.
I don't know.
Some itchy thing that gets him up and jumping around, you know.
I don't know, maybe. Let's go back to the phone.
I'm sorry, that's silly. Ignore that.
Francis, good morning.
Hey, where to begin?
I don't know.
Thank you, corporate media, for creating Donald Trump.
Well, that's a good... Let me just say, that's really a good point. NBC, I believe it was, ran his stupid shows for, what, 11 years? And they were just...
Well, and then they provided the nomination to him. If you turned on MSNBC or CNN any time of day or night, I swear to God, within 5 minutes, you heard the name Trump. Any time, day or night, prior to the primary. It's amazing to me. However, when we talk about right now, our country is bombing in Sirte, Libya.
Mm-hmm.
Right now. We're also bombing in Syria.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still bombing in Yemen.
Well, we're bombing in Afghanistan. Iraq. We're bombing in Iraq. We're bombing.
Okay. Right. At this moment, as we speak,
yeah.
innocent people are being killed by our bombs.
Yes.
Donald Trump is putting on a show for us. And to me, he epitomizes all the covert feelings of the Republicans who recess without providing legislation for that Sitka virus and without having a hearing on a Supreme Court justice. He is the extreme epitome of a lot of their thoughts.
Do you mean like he's the logical outcome of their thinking, or do you mean he's just...
He is their extreme example
okay.
of who they are
okay.
at heart. And... I don't know how anyone... I wish that Jill Stein could get a 15% by the time there's a debate, because I would love to hear her debate Hillary Clinton, because there would be no contest. And when people speak of these terrorists as being just hating us for whatever reason, I don't know, maybe because we bombed the bejeebies out of the country a couple times, two or three times, you know, maybe that might be why they're mad at us. They might be considered insurgents rather than terrorists. And where are they getting all their weapons from? Weapons that we left there?
Well, in large part.
That were left in Libya after Gaddafi was killed. You know, who's perpetrating these
insurgency? They also get a lot of money from oil. And in fact, Turkey is implicated in that for a long period of time. And the fact of the matter is that they do have access to money. Also, remember the whole philosophy that animates this radical element of Islam really comes out of Saudi Arabia. Out of Wahhabi Islam, which was until fairly recently not a major force.
They made a great big arms deal with the United States just recently. I heard your bell that you were talking, so I got to say something. I remember when they used to call the situation in Ireland a religious war between the Catholics and the Protestants, but it was actually between the oppressed and the oppressors. And that's what I believe a lot of this is, and we're putting it on religion. And when we want to talk about whether or not we should go with a third party, at some point we're going to have to bust out of this nonsense. And I would just like people to think about maybe a young super predator right at this moment sitting in solitary confinement somewhere in this country. There's thousands of them. And perhaps maybe someone could show him a television. And perhaps he could see the news that is wondering, showing a clip of Bill Clinton, who wrote that awful crime bill, playing with balloons as his wife is being nominated as the president. The man who and his wife who have marked them as super predators, and they're sitting in solitary confinement right now.
Now, Francis, you call
and
this...
For anyone to suggest that we need to continue this little charade is, to me, not thinking straight.
Francis,
maybe
you,
I'm crazy.
You've called this program many times. I have a hard time believing you that you buy into the concept of the super predator.
I don't buy into it.
Okay.
They called her she called those children that.
Yeah, no, yeah, I know she did. I think your point is
you were using the term ironically. I got it.
Why they got that way, but right now we need to bring them to heal. She said that.
I know.
And so what has the country been doing? They're bringing them to heal, putting them in solitary confinement. This is not the way America operates.
Well, unfortunately, it is.
Is that okay? Do we want to change it or not?
I definitely would like to change it.
The route between the rock and the hard place is that green path, and we got to try it because there's nothing else to do.
Hey, Francis, thanks for the call.
You take care.
You too. Bye-bye. Shelley writes into the Facebook page to say, "Good morning, Abe and Joe. I agree with the caller about the corporate media." She's talking about Francis. "Every newscast reports things that he who must not be named says and does if these things were newsworthy. I don't hear or see news about any other candidate reported this way." I disagree with the assessment that the corporate media created Donald Trump. Donald Trump is Donald Trump. What is really responsible for his rise is the rhetoric that's been fed to the Republican base for 30 years, telling the American people that black and brown people are violent, that they are coming here to take jobs, that they are a siphon of government resources away from people who actually deserve it, and on and on and on and on. This is what created the conditions in which Donald Trump has sprung to life politically. The corporate media didn't do it. The Republican Party did it, by pandering to the racists among their base.
Well, I a little bit I agree with you, but a little bit I really don't. I really do believe that the drive for listenership and consequently better advertising revenues is responsible for Trump's rise in just general popularity.
Sure.
His shows where everybody digs it when he says, "You're fired," appealing to the most dark aspect of anger and sadness and real pain that many people are experiencing as the economy, in large part driven by what I call late stage capitalism, which includes the previous Clinton administration, drives people into this situation. And remember, we have a society in which history as taught is fantasy. It's a glorification of, I mean, it's even to the extent where when I was a kid, I learned that George Washington said he could not tell a lie, and he told his dad that he chopped down a cherry tree and he wasn't punished. And that was cool, you know. So what we really, really have is a society where most of our history is mythology and where most people are historically ignorant and where the complexities of history and of events have been buried in a very simplistic patriotic point of view. So we have American exceptionalism, which is really a description of a destruction of the peoples of this continent and of the land of this region, driven by European adventurism and imperialism and empire building. And we're not going to face, most Americans are not going to face that. That's both unpatriotic and untenable. So mythology now fits in to a base where an analysis that really needs to be made can never be made. And I think that is a very serious problem. As to the question of whether or not this is a time to introduce a serious socialist candidate, well, I think Francis and others raise a good point. When do we ever do that? And then the answer is the system is rigged against a third party at this point. And right now, from my perspective, the clear and present danger is so enormous that I find anything less than a recognition of that very frightening situation kind of stupid. That's just my point of view.
I think to attribute Donald Trump's rise to the news and entertainment media is to overlook the message of racism and exclusion and misogyny that has been fed to the dumbest among us in the conservative base for many, many years.
Well, I can't disagree with you. I mean, I think both work together. And I think, though, that the irony of the major media loving the money he was able to raise for them in advertising revenue is a large part of this, you know. And I really do think that we are looking at what I call late stage or end stage capitalism, which really is fascist or proto-fascist, and we're out of time.
I think capitalism's just getting warmed up. All right, it's good to be back with you, and we'll see you next week.
Yeah.
Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming.
Come over here, to the right-hand speaker.
KBOO's book and record sale is happening August 13th at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Coot Street, starting at noon. Find treasures amongst the stacks of donated items while raising money for KBOO, your very own community radio station.
Friction between the stylus and the record produces a force which makes the arm try to swing towards the record center.
Again, that's KBOO's book and record sale, Saturday, August 13th from noon to 7 p.m. at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Coot Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I'm now standing in the center, and my voice should be located precisely midway between the speakers.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on alternative radio, writer Thomas Frank talks about